I'm going to introduce our guests one by one, and first up is Dominic Taylor from Limerick, who co-organises the White House Poetry Revival. Dominic, I've known for a good number of years now. He's probably the backbone of the White House, really, the amount of work that he puts into it. His own work has been published in Revival, the Stony Thursday book, Boyneberries, Cronogue, and Microphone on the White House Anthology. And he's also a songwriter and has produced two albums of work. He's a board member of the Limerick Writers Centre. So please, we have a warm welcome for Dominic Taylor.
Thanks, Paul. I'm delighted to be here as a representative of the White House, and I look forward to six O'Gill Poets coming up in a couple of weeks' time on the 3rd of the 2nd of December. I'll keep it short. I'll just read a few points. I'd like to start off with a poem I wrote and published in our latest revival, and it's dedicated to our old friend McCord, who's been a great friend of the White House and supporter of ours through the years. And so this is a poem called Talking, and it's in memory of Frank McCord. A little epigraph. Words are all we have, Samuel Beckett. In Limerick, it relieved the boredom. Nothing is significant unless you make it significant, you said. Trundling past way upon way, confronting the shadows, finding yourself again among words. And now the shift to silence, as the lights of this old town slip towards the new light of dawn. Some of my older work. This is a villanelle. You all know the rhyming scheme for that. She sits by the window. She sits by the window alone in her room. Her children are gone, have all flown the nest. She feels that her life is over too soon. Her kitchen now feels like a tomb, disheveled and bare, her life in a mess. She sits by the window alone in her room. A life without reason lived in a cocoon. She reached for the stars but settled for less. She feels that her life is over too soon. Her days all akimbo and all out of tune. She says it's her fault if she must confess. She sits by the window alone in her room. She remembers the laughter of youth in full bloom. A vessel now empty like the Marie Celeste. She feels that her life is over too soon. She looks in the mirror. She sees only gloom. All her dots and her dashes that spell SOS. She sits by the window alone in her room. She feels that her life is over too soon. The next one is called The Mass Pass, and it's about a little place I visit quite regularly in the County Limerick, or the Lochgar area. It was always our way, our Via della Messa. Crisp bright mornings, we made our way around the loch to the little chapel for Sunday Mass. Each and every one following in age-old footsteps, consecrated by time. No guiding light needed or bell to sound our footfalls. Now strangers stop our path and feign welcome, as if we were the trespassers on ancient ground. Older than 1,000 megalithic nights, yet still carrying the prayers of its people to the altar of sacrifice and renewal. Beyond the clear light you, I see beggars dancing, made rich by conquest, but unable to see the invisible gold of bare ground and fire flickering in open hearts, held together with poems and songs that enter into us and make us what we are, pilgrims on the mass path. Thank you. A couple of years ago there, I lived in London in the 70s. A couple of years ago, I revisited it for the first time after a long, long time with my son. And this is a little poem called London Revisited, Abbey Road. We joined a line of devotees outside the EMI studios on Abbey Road. Studied their graffitied walls, half expecting John, Paul, George or Ringo to appear on the steps of the old Georgian building. We stroll over the zebra crossing, vie for opportunity to recreate the famous album cover. For a moment, I see the London of the 70s alive again. From then to now, back by an obscure, circuitous route, but I walk by here every day, not noticing the crossing. Today, as I stand by the road sign and pose for one more picture, I see myself passing by. The text that I wrote to my older brother. It's called Weapons of Mass Destruction. You always came home with the most unusual things. A Balubas bow just back from the Congo, a German Luger, handheld air guns, and various types of knives. Of course, cowboys and Indians was your favorite game, a hurley your substitute for a rifle. And in the gardens of our estate, you shot and killed your fair share of Indians before mass on Sunday mornings. As you grew older, you put away the guns and knives, grew your hair long, bought a pair of hipsters, started playing more outside the Wimpy Bar and the Beat Club on Post Office Lane. You even swapped your beloved Balubas bow for a guitar, and your knives became paintbrushes. And of course, mass was out the window, leaving us behind to fight the rear guard action. I'll just finish with a couple of fictional narratives beloved of Kenneth Skinner, who sort of inspired me. Adam and Eve. She smiled at me. "Your change," she said. As she put the money into my hand, her skin momentarily brushed against mine. I heard a bat squeak. I looked up, caught her eye, and the two of us were naked in the Garden of Eden. "Thank you," I said, as I picked up the apple and left. These are fictional numbers. I open the fridge and see sausages. All kinds of sausages. Some thin, some fat, some curved. Some are tied together, others have big bulging veins of fat running through them. There are dark rich ones, pale pink ones, and a bunch of cocktail sausages lying casually on a plate. Each in their own way provide pleasure of some sort, but right now I fancy something hot and spicy, like a savalot. Of course, at the moment, I'm on a fat-free diet, but what the heck? Surely a little indulgence won't kill me. I reach into the fridge, pick the biggest one I can find, and just then, my wife comes into the kitchen, and before she opens her mouth, I hand it to her and say, "Could you cook that for me? I'm starving."
Thank you, Dominic. That was great. Next up we have Evelyn Casey, whose first time at a Velvet Our Master's Lounge Show. She's from Limerick and has lived in North Germany for 14 years. She's a fitness and health consultant and trainer working at the University of Limerick Sports Arena, and she's been writing since she can remember. Evelyn Casey.
I've been writing, but I haven't been reading since I can remember. This is my actually first time being a guest reader. I'm all over the place. I picked a theme in my poems, and the theme is about people that are close to me, or people that I know. It's a people theme. I had a rain theme as well. The first one is called Not Remembering. It's about a new neighbour of mine, a friend of mine, who's 88 years of age, and he's had a leg amputated last year, and so this doesn't worry him, not because the pain is gone. What worries him the most is that he's starting to suffer from Alzheimer's and starting to forget. It's called Not Remembering. For 55 years, I have loved you. We saw the sun shine and the stars go blue many times. Managed good times and not so. Started humble and let it grow. Your hair is like silk, your touch soft and gentle. But I cannot remember your name, feels like I'm going mental. I can't recall our trip was late. I remember once we're climbing a gate to see the horse show, so long ago, now sedate. What I can recall is how you cried when Mom, or was it Dad, who died. I ponder and wonder what it was that made you choose me as the one to love. Some days I'm still there and not rolling around in this old chair, repeating tales of sorrow and woe and cheer to anyone who calls me dear. Not sure if it's been a ball on our stage of life, not sure if you are my mother or my wife. If I could forget what it is that makes me forget, it's those terrible things going on in my head. Is today a day of celebration, or just one more of no recognition? Faces keep creeping inside my mind. What use are my eyes when they let me blind? My ears still hear, but no one speaks. My hands still clench and open fist. My heart still yearns for the signs of you. And when you're here, I'm missing you. Difference in my appearance showing, but not so bad. But the difference in not knowing, this makes me sad. And not being able to say, good morning, honey, I love you. The second poem is from my mother. She died very, very long time ago when I was a girl. It's called The Photograph I Have of You from My Mother. I gaze deep into your grey eyes and try to see what kind of life you thought it would be. Your beauty shines from deep within and penetrates my being. Your smile tells no sorrow. Your pain allows no tomorrow. Your fear haunts your soul. Your love endless and complete. My mother, with your special charm. My mother, with your heart so warm. You beauty, born to share and care your love and patience. I try to see what you went through. I try to sense your despair. I hold your inner and your image and whisper, do you hear? No one can surmise my depth of love without you. When I gaze into those soft gray eyes and this photograph I have of you. The third one's for my children. In September, before this rain fell, we had a beautiful day, a beautiful sunshine, and we snuck up onto the roof of the apartment block where I lived and brought out a picnic basket, and we had a picnic. It's called Le Vie en Rose. You can't know what I feel, not yet. The emptiness when everyone parts. It was great. One of those best days of my life, picnicking on the rooftop. My three precious loves and their precious love. Sunshine in September, red like Indian summer, beautiful blue sky, we all on a blanket, eating chicken, drinking red and French white, chocolate orange sponge for the birthday cake girls. This moment should last. Here, I could die and be happy, knowing that you are safe eating our chocolate cake, soaking up the rays, speaking of past and present, wondering which name you would give the not even conceived newborn, or if the wedding band would fit. We are safe with each other, no matter what, who, no matter when, where. I always have you. You always have me. I savor this loving you, this moment, on this rooftop and every rooftop, from here to eternity. I wish the universe could speak and give everyone our secret. Let them see how simple it can be. You three, friends, the sun, and our picnic basket, on our rooftop, and the music plays, Edith Pierce sings. Next one is very short, it's for my daughter, Casey. And before I had my daughter, I had a miscarriage and lost a baby, and then I was really worried and I was pregnant on this baby. And I knew exactly what I wanted. I wanted a girl, I wanted to know what she was going to look like, and this is what I wanted. I didn't want anything else. And it's called Before You Were You. Before You Were You. I dreamt of you. I thought I lost you. But then I dreamt of you. With your dark, silk hair and your big, brown eyes. You should be there this time. when they break my water, when they take the drip from my veins, you should be there. And I've got a last one. This is from a dad. I have 10 siblings. The one, which was really sick 2 years ago, and then she recovered, and after she recovered, my dad decided to exit this life. And he exited 2 days before my mum's birthday, who had died of my son's death. It's called Like a Great Old Indian for Dad. He had 11 reasons for living, between 35 and 50. His only love left a long time before. No choice. Cancer chewed her up, spat her out in a wooden box. 2 through 11 were free souls, little care. Day-to-day concerns grew. Number 1, firstborn. Her pain almost killed him. Close to leaving many times, we inhaled her, held her deep inside, holding our breath until she could breathe alone. He took this chance, his escape, slipping away unnoticed, the victor, timing his exit, abandoned the tribe as it should be. 12 apostles gathered at the table of life, pressing together. He, the chief. We shared Christmas with others. He made us smile, now lost in tears. He made us sing, surpassing oneself as he did. Spilling out his life, reminding those to remember the birthday of his loved one. Then he did it. Emptied his soul like a great old Indian. Meditating on his mountain, transformed to extraordinary state of consciousness, content and proud. Watching his tribe dance through the night in his dreams, like the sky's own nature cast down at dawn before sunrise. Then, set his soul free, becoming one again with his true love, so that he could dance on her birthday. Thank you.
Thank you, Evelyn. Casey Boys everywhere today. Next up, we have Tom McCarthy, who I'm delighted to invite to the microphone here. He's from Limerick, but lives in County Clare. It's half the people from Limerick, too. He's a poet, he's a songwriter and an artist. Poet in the old Irish bardic tradition. He has one chapbook published and has also been published in Revival. Winner of the inaugural Desmond O'Grady International Festival Trophy and also a finalist in the 2009 All-Ireland Poetry Slam in Galway. I think you came third of that, didn't you, Tom?
Mm.
Yeah, congratulations. Tom McCarthy.
If you believe that, then you're a fool. Donald is gone, but I actually know how he won that little five-word over there, because he actually went healing to Cork, didn't he? Boy, he was stopping on Cork.
He's gone to the tires.
He's
going to drink his pint. Right, getting away from poetry, I just picked a few simple things tonight. This is called Trapped in the Box, when you do the smoking. Anybody that might want to get up, see what it's. Trapped in a box. I was once a fresh green leaf, no worries, no regrets, but now I'm trapped inside a box, they call me cigarettes. I find it hard to breathe in here, and I'm screaming, let me out. And when you do, you light me up, and put me in your mouth. I was once a fresh green leaf, not trapped to anyone, but now I'm trapped inside your lungs, my life has just begun. I strive to make your breathing harder, and make your cough and choke. I block up all your arteries, I tell you I'm no joke. I get revenge for all the times you put me in your mouth. I let you breathe me in, but you'll never blow me out. I cast a shadow deep and wide far across your chest, and listen to you gasp for air until your last request. You were once so fine and strong, no worries, no regrets, but now you're trapped inside a box because of me. Cigarettes. few years ago. I suppose it has a bit to do with separation and divorce, I suppose, but and what happens in the middle there, your children. So I just actually wrote this and I call it Chameleons. And the reason I call it Chameleons is, most of you know what a chameleon is. Chameleon has no defense. It just changes colors. It hops from tree to branch or whatever it is and changes colors from the earth just as a defense. So I compare the chameleon with a child. A broken home, a world unknown, the children torn apart, chameleons in a forest, forever changing heart. Hopes are built and hopes are dashed, lots of tears so little lasts, uncertainty and fear. The child is only asking for a little love and care. It matters not to them with whom they may lie, beneath their smiling faces you can see the tearful eye. The anguish and the pain is tearing them apart, chameleons in a forest, forever changing heart. A broken home, a world unknown. It seems quite so unfair. The child is only asking for a little love and care. This is actually, I wrote a farming poem here, I call it Lasting Impression. Last time I was here, it actually helped me to get through to the finals of the Slam Poetry Competition. Well, this I actually wrote at the same time. It's kind of a little cast up at the point, at the farming point. Gone but not forgotten. Awakened by a soft, gentle voice. A simple thought reaching out, surfacing in a dream. Memories of my mother and father, and my lovely wife, Lori. Memories of the early morning call for the milking of the cows. And the clanging of the milk churns dancing on the pony and cart. Glorious, glorious memories. Faster the winters and the long days of summer. The sweet smell of the corn and the call of the crake. And the fragrance of the homemade bread and how it would bake in the open heart. Beautiful, beautiful memories. Awakened by the touch of a hand. A simple thought reaching out, surfacing in a dream. Memories of a newborn calf stabbing to its feet. Unaware of its purpose in life, and how by the sweat of my brow I chastise the earth with my horse and plow, knowing in my heart and in my soul that the earth will win in the end. I can still see the seagulls flocking round as I turn the earth, and how tears of joy run down my cheeks when my lovely wife Lorraine gave birth to my son and heir Martin Gerard Peel McMahon. Memories of the stiff frozen grass quickly beneath my warm boots. And my mud-baked fingers cracked and dry from planting crops and pulling roots. Wonderful, priceless memories, glorious thoughts reaching out, surfacing in a dream. Beautiful, beautiful memories bestowed on me by my mother and father and my lovely wife, my lovely, lovely wife, Noreen. Read all that I have my notes, the post coming up behind me. I just rushed in tonight, took one of the poems off the table and out the door. I actually held the lines up by half an hour, I think. This is actually something that I might give to Tom Maloney there for the front of his book, because he beat me to a book. He has a book out on Thursday. He's launching his book on Thursday. So he's one of our local Whitehouse poets. I wish him the best of luck. But this is something I might actually put in the front of my book, and it's called My Life's Breath. Read my poetry when I die, wipe those tears, please don't cry. Read a line, take the verse, you walk behind an empty hearse. Within your palm you hold my soul, I'll versify that vacant hole. And when you find the time to read, take my book, please help me breathe. Read me gentle, take me calm, you hold my soul within your palm. And even though my body's gone, within this book my soul lives on. And I'll finish with one I read here the last night, actually helped to get me through to that the competition I was forced into by Dominic Taylor. Dominic Taylor actually is a wonderful person on the basis of poetry. I mean, when he just was offered something in the Garden of Eden, and he just took the apple and ran away. That wasn't fair on the girl to do that. But however, he is a man that has the White House poetry. Has the White House poetry up and going, and he does fantastic work. As do a man who couldn't make it tonight. That was Barney Sheehan. So we must apologise for Barney. We're not good. So this actually is the angle I came here. At this point was actually based on drugs, in a sense, even though you might see it, but you wouldn't hear it. I'm just telling you, and even if I told you, I just tell you it's based on drugs. And I call it Hey Fiddle Diddle. Can you imagine 1,000 children splashing up moon dust in a fishbowl and doing somersaults in the thick atmosphere of the moon? Left wondering how they got through the ozone layer without protective clothing. Like how nearly knocking the bowl over, and a little dog laughed to see such fun as the dish ran away with the hot spoon. Can you imagine for 1 minute being a prince, kissing Snow White on the lips, bringing her back to life, hallucinating her as your princess, only to suffocate her again by galloping off into the depth of the sea on a grey-white seahorse stallion, leaving the seven dwarfs in tears? The same prince returning to claim the glass slipper, found in the palace hall after the royal ball, in his excitement letting it slip through his fingers, smashing it into 1,000 crystal pieces, losing all hope of finding feet as petite as Cinderella's. Can you imagine being the daddy bear getting angry when finding the family's porridge had been nibbled at, and the blankets on the beds had been ruffled with, chasing Goldilocks through the forest, crashing into Little Red Riding Hood, scattering the contents of her basket, only to discover a casket full to the brim with coke, heroin, and upjohn 90s. Medicine for her sick, aging grandmother, so she told the big bad wolf in uniform. Can you imagine 3 little pigs needing a fix to go through the ozone layer without protective clothing? Wanting to stash up moon dust in a fishbowl and do somersaults in the thick atmosphere of the moon? Hey Diddle Diddle, the cat and the fiddle. The cow jumped over the moon. The little dog laughed to see such fun. And the dish got high with a hot spoon. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Next up we have Donal O'Flynn, who is from Charleville, County Cork. He has had poems published in various anthologies. He's an engineer and has lived and worked in the Middle East, the Far East, Africa and America. And his first collection, Lost Grace, was published this year by Revival Press. So could we please welcome Donal O'Flynn.
Yep. This poem I wrote 11 years ago, yesterday. On this day, 35 years ago, a golden curtain fell, bringing disbelief, stunned silence to a world audience. The play was wonderful, the script extraordinary, the sets exquisite, the costumes classy, the language captivating. The greatest actor of all made his final exit holding forth, violently bowed backwards by assassin's bullets. The lights went out, and there was no one behind the glittering curtain to take his place. John F. Kennedy. By the church spire. By the numerous church spires, we know who we are and where, in numbers gathered. But it won't last, not in this form. Her absolute power did corrupt in the slow dying body that is the masculine Roman Catholic Church. Maybe I'm wrong. I see where their work harbors now. How the message has reverted to hellseers of my youth amidst the poor of the third world. whereby lovers hope to retain lordly power, riding on the backs of destitute hopes and dreams, lifetime subjugation. Lost poetry, legends, forget who we are. They took our pagan gods, hero devils, made them into their holiday celebration. One day, a hero of our own life, with station, will inflame us, burn away corruptions for sake of mitre, gold, incense, and ornament. Leave us with questions which no man can honestly answer. Magic will help me. Shadow. Last night, I met the son of a widow in secret. Again, he asked me to join. Pledge advantages that accrue to somebody like me. Said that they'd agreed. I belong with them under the fig tree. I told him, no, not yet. I will continue to trust in my shadow for the time being. Poetry in motion. We gathered in tight after the final. 20 pints all around. There was a scattering of Tipperary men and Cork men among the bannermen, and mostly they all stuck with the parish rules. Accents really came into play with the calls for songs. Owl slang familiar to all, in particular peculiar sounds, and the singing, well, that became another contest. First the county and rebel songs in bawling banter, then the odd Sinatra country and western tune, but the solo, eyes closed, head shake, hat break song, ones with tune so mean to all of us, was the loudest clapping regardless of county. Poetry in motion, the men said, and how the black stuff flowed, and how the night grew loud, and how the language, laughter, and singing mingled in joyous rapture. I came from the country, but a child, I came from Belly here, and was brought up in a very farming background. The old farming type of ground. Well, when I grew up, there was three cows in the parish of Belly here. The priest, the doctor, and a local rich farmer. But at Matt and Sunday, I mean, to go on horses and traps and horses and cows. Neighbours and hay. And I have a little epigraph here from James Dean's poem, Return. In this Irish past, I dwell like a sound implicit in a bell. Neighbours and hay. All the farmers had horses then. Twas expected you'd turn up for the day. In anticipation, another tumbling paddy or skeeter would be about. Horses who only met a creamery bit grass contented along headlands, until extra hands forced another one into the traces for the long, hard day. It was honest, God-fearing work, but all the neighbours cooperated in making the hay. And I'll finish with this one. I wrote this one. My father was a mighty man, as I say. But he died. He was 92 when he died. And he died in hospital. He got that MMRS. His first time ever in hospital. But he played. He was a Galway man, on Chicadea, and played football in Dublin. He captain Connacht in 1947 when they won the Grey Cup. Boxing and smart, he taught, and he was a very physical man. But at the end of his life, he got really badly shaped up. He started to get Alzheimer's, and his legs were taken. But Castletown Roach Gun Club decided to honour him because he was one of the founder members with a Hall of Fame award. And for the last public action of his life, I think, really. And I brought him up there with some friends, and he was in a nappy and everything at the time. But nobody knew it, because I mean, he was in a bad state, but the mind was gone, but just did enough before. Because I wrote this a good bit after he died, please. Dada and the Hall of Fame Award. I finish up with this one, and thanks very much. How hard you found it rise so slowly from your crippled chair. Out of a world of spirals and circles intertwined came the world, which jarred and gnarled for want of oil or of ice, with the same steep steps that made the squares forge new shapes. Time and space were turned and moulded in beautiful time. The way forward was back, and time lost meaning. 3-1-2 Jungle and tidy went awash in a green sea azure. Larry left happily in Cuckoo Land 1-3-2 Aha, but what is the one? A song came to me. Rambling Rose, how you ramble, no one knows. Your speech took you back. They have reminded everyone you were born in 1914. I remember how me and Billy O'Neill, it was 1931, you forgot and then bumbled, rambled with the roses for the longest stilted time. Briary thorns cut deep in you. Dog roses wrapped themselves tight around you, finally choking you for the longest minute. Then Kevin McSweeney massively shouted, give us a song then. A further moment silence, recollection, smile. You gave us a thoughtless recognition of the West's awake. Water retention and bloating large nappies incongruous. The peace of his room and the lock ticking shut, gone forever. The nightmare of unconscious of lost past all around him is torture. Stark colours that are lost forever in night vision. The inscrutable Sphinx holds the secret. 4-2-3 The desert kind song in the blistering air. Sing a song then, sing a song then. The old point of its ramrod, the hidden, present, paralyzed, nudge, pounce, fly, sky, sky, fly high, bang, you're dead.
Thank you, Donald, for those moving poems. Our final guest tonight before the open mic, and I hope the previous poets won't mind me saying we've saved the best for last. Perry Mayne has had three collections of poetry published by Stonebridge, and the children's novel is ready to be published. She is currently the editor of Revival, and her new and selected poems will be published in 2010 by Revival Press. I'm delighted to know her. She's a good friend, a lovely person, a wonderful poet. Perry Mayne.
Thank you, Paul. I'm delighted to be here, and thank you for listening. These poems are from my second collection, Poems from the Exclusion Zone, and I'll start with the War Poets Convention. It's about a man I met on a train in the smoking section of a train in a place called the Philadelphia. And it was 7 o'clock in the morning, and I woke up and I suddenly realised that the top deck of the train had a smoking section, so I went up So I got to know this man. He was called Clyde J. Ray. He was a war poet, a big African-American man. It was just the war poet convention. The Philadelphians staggered across the sleeping states from Toledo, Ohio to Washington, D.C. In the segregated section, cigarette ends rolled in our seats like spent cartridges or lay as the dead in the pit of a middle ashtray. The man told me that he had served in the Mekong Delta and Saigon, saw forests defoliated by Agent Orange, and villages where children's body parts were stripped of the bone and bleached. Said he wanted no possessions, saw them as hostages to the vagaries of hags with bombs and bags and brazen bullets, owned only what he could carry on his lap, a black box, lid snapped shut, as a coffers for the soldier's sonnet. Then he asked me to read at the monument, but I know nothing of the anatomy of other battlefields, did not belong, had little to say to an army of poets involved in peacetime hosting for Memorial Day. This is called the Poets in Ward Field. It's about a travelling lady I heard being interviewed on the radio, and she could neither read nor write, so she dictated her poems and other people wrote them down and read them. So I eventually got the poem to her, but she'd no address, because travelling people don't seem to have. So this is the Poets in Ward Field. A daughter of Bridget tends a fire and invokes a blessing from the patron saint of Smith, smooths out the kinks and warps of our ancestry with stories, hammers myths of stories with hammers myths of nomads on slivers of tin, rivets handles onto buckets beaten in submission on anvils of discarded engines, and alchemists melting base for metals, while we wallow out our lies and bank down the ashes, afraid that travelling sparks might kindle chaos in the normality of houses, contaminate our culture with the truth. This is called Villages by Crumlin. I grew up in a place in Dublin called a village called Crumlin, which was surrounded by a huge big housing estate, but we got our genealogy done, and apparently my mother's family, my matriarchal side of the family, goes back to Crumlin to the 15th century. So this is Villages like Crumlin. The moon was a slice of silver, spangled stars danced on branches where mythical apples, drops of gold and green skin shimmered in old, old light. The knowledge of dreams, forged and seen, tended by nymphs and women like me, the watchful daughters of the night, who wander from lives untold, find shelter in the ripened orchard of the soul, and still never can conceive of the alchemy that fuses fruits to trees. Oh, Idaia hoists her autumn crop and heaves a corset of branches under a bodice of leaves, and squats on the ties of trees, trembling and immodest, and bears the old, old painted flesh from the belly of the goddess. When I was a very young woman, I lived in a place in Dublin called Fatima Mansions, and it had a notorious name for all sorts of anti-social behaviour, and my family said, don't move there. But I did eventually. I lived in 36 off Fatima Mansions. I had four small children there, and it was a wonderful place to live. It was a matriarchal society. The husbands were all in England, or the young men had moved off. So this is the Parliament of Crone. The Mother of God moved to Fatima Mansions when she was just past childbearing age, and the plaster skin that had moulded her started to peel and fade.
bought a headscarf in Thomas Street, and shed Persephone's girlish veils, when all the old wives' children at it could not reverse the change. Wife that she once did to her son, the children's sticky hands, that smudged and tore and poked behind the curtains where the windows of heaven stand. Dipped into the belly of a galvanized bath, resbobbled with braces of sunlight soap that burst on rims of washboard slats. Skipped on the soles of sodden slippers, apron bulged with embryos of heads, down the steps where gauze boots flattered the knotted nylons on our legs. Pinned her sorrows on the line as brooches on her Sunday blouse, and longed for private space for grief, but never again yearned to live in the house. Keyed with a parliament of crones who sat for the summer session on thrones of old worn stone. Two judgments on the teeth of banshees' combs, broke bread with the mothers of other carpenters, or sons and husbands on stone. I finished with a poem called Agamemnon's Daughter. This is about being the daughter of a horse house. On nights when I did not need to defend your slackened arms, nor staunch your running wounds, and I was a woman before I ever became a girl, we sat, armour unhinged, breastplates loosened, and forged a fence of mist around each other. Like the crippled god Hephaestus, scorned by Aphrodite, who flaunted her sobriety in a chastity belt seldom unbound. You said that Crumlin, her land, could never breed poets. Water was needed to nourish the words, and the pod lacked the Ionian depths of intercourse command. Since your death, I have stumbled on iambic feet and uncertain floors, gnawed at the bones of desecrated temples in the architecture of my soul, and heard again the echoed crash of girlhood's tear-sealed doors. Haunted by your war-hungry eyes, your craving for drink, thirst for obscure histories, search for hidden meaning, the shriveled images of your poet's heart, and the scathing sense of humour on which I have often hacked my humanity, I now claim the parts of me that once belonged to you. Thank you.
Thank you for the White House poets.